5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
With Car Guru's Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Guru's Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Guru's is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Guru's at cargurus.com. Go to cargurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's cargurus.com. Cargurus.com.
We're gonna cause trouble. Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline. We're gonna make fun of people. We're gonna hurt people's feelings. It's Farrell on the bench. I believe in whipped cream with everything. Farrell on the bench in the biggest way possible. Hanging out, a bad day, a broken day, a bad apple with a bad attitude. Hanging around a bunch of bad, had a bad day, bad law, bad day, bad, bad, bad attitude, bad vibes. We are live in the Magic City Studios in the Farrell of Malaysia, right across the river to the woods from her granny's about to go to bed. But before she does, she likes to have a big old toke of the wowzers in New York City. The Big Apple. Ooh. People dressed in plastic bags, the British Travis, the kind of fashion shaking up should do, but all my friends are coming out to fight the party of rats on the west side, the bit of uptown. What a mess, the town's down, and my brain splattered all over Manhattan. Should do shake it. I think I might have caught something from Keith. It's Farrell with Carver High tonight on a terrible Tuesday as we watch more ALCS action. Boston up 2-1 in the fifth. Astros up, two outs, nobody on. Boston leading in this game. I think it was a two-run shot earlier in the game and over the wall in left. And I think it was Bogart's shot, 413 feet. Devers was on base. Bregman had homered for a 1-0 lead for the Astros, but then Bogarts made it 2-1. That's where we stand now, and it's been a pretty tight game. Not a ton of runs tonight for the Red Sox and their vaunted offense. It's just 2-1 now going to the bottom of the fifth inning. And how about the Dodgers' performance? They were getting their ass beat 5-2. By the Braves, about to go up 3-0 in the NLCS with a big three-run lead at Dodger Stadium in the eighth inning when Cody Bellinger hit a three-run game-tying home run, a bomb to right center, and then you get a Mookie Betts double into the gap, driving in the winning run, 6-5 Dodgers. And I got to tell you, that place was absolutely going nuts. It's the first time in their history, in the entire franchise's history, that they've been down three runs in a playoff game after the seventh inning and actually won the game. The Dodgers win it 6-5. And now tomorrow can even the series if they can win under the lights at Chavez Ravine in game four. What did you think, Carver High?
Yeah, unbelievable performance by the Dodgers late. And Cody Bellinger, who had such an awful year, to finally get it done again. And look, Listen, we know it's a series changer. I mean, the difference between 3-0 and 2-1 is absolutely massive. And now the Dodgers are going to have a lot of juice with Urias on the mound tomorrow night to try to even this thing at 2. Just a monster home run from Cody Bellinger.
Do you think the Braves, they look like someone stole their dog after that home run? Because I think they thought they had the game in the bag and the series in the bag. They would have gone up 3-0. Welcome our radio affiliates to the show on a Tuesday. All of them serious. Mightier 1090, Sports Map, Sports Byline. What did you think of their, you know, ability to lose the 3-0 lead in a matter of seconds, and now it's 2-1. They're still on top, but they look like someone stole their car.
As they should. I mean, let's think about this here. Up 3-1 last year, couldn't finish them off. Outs away from going up 3-0 this year. Dodgers back again, and it was Bellinger last year who was such a huge part in that NLCS with the comeback. Wow. Honestly, I almost feel like this could change the entire series. Like, I thought the Braves would win the series up 2-0. I'm changing my tune now. I think that that's the kind of game where the Dodgers can ride momentum tomorrow, make this 2-2, and win 2 out of 3.
God almighty, it was unbelievable. They were up 2-0 on the Seager home run. I think when we were on the air on Coast to Coast.
First inning.
And then, sure enough, like an hour later, they were losing 4-2, then 5-2. And I thought they were dead to rights.
I was with you. 5-2 in the eighth. It was looking very, very, very bleak for the Dodgers. Get a couple on, you get a big hit. Amazing.
Amazing that Bellinger has done what he's done in the postseason in so many spots, because he's basically been worthless for a year, right, or longer. He's fallen off the face of the earth as a player for the Dodgers. Guy couldn't hit his way out of a wet paper bag. And then now in the playoffs, he's really had multiple big moments. And he keeps coming through for them. And today, he saved the day.
He certainly did. He actually won them the Giants series with that hit in Game 5. And now saves them in the NLCS in Game 3 at home at Chavez Ravine. Listen, I'll take him being bad all year if he's going to get you huge hits in the postseason.
Just saw a shot of the Intercontinental in downtown Lipstick City, your favorite hotel. The lobby's on the 70th floor. It's Pharrell on a bench. All right, Pharrell on a bench. So I watched the Bucks get their rings tonight and raise their banner in Milwaukee, and then they blew out the Nets. I was really surprised at how badly they kicked Brooklyn's ass. I mean, I know they had a decent second quarter and outscored them, but I mean, honestly, it was like they outscored them 34-29. They shot like 67% in the second quarter. But the bottom line is they got smoked in every other quarter. 37-25 in the first, 31-26 in the third, 30-19 in the fourth. 127-104 was the final. And I just didn't, you know, I thought Durant was terrible, 13-25. He had 32. That's because he chucked 25 shots. 3 of 7 from 3, 11 rebounds, 4 assists. Any guy in the league will take those numbers any night. But every time I turn around, he was missing a shot. Like, that's just, you know, whatever. He missed 12 shots, and nobody else did. Jack Harden was even worse. 6 of 16 from the floor, 4 of 8 from 3, 8 rebounds, 8 dimes, 20 points, 8 and 8 for Harden. Millsap, nothing. James Johnson, 1 point. Aldridge, 1 point. Aldridge was worthless. Brown, no points. Patty Mills was tough, 21. He hit 7 for 7 from 3. That was the difference for Patty Mills. He hit all seven of his threes. All of his points came from beyond the arc. Giannis had 32, 12 of 25 from the floor, 1 of 4 from 3, 14 rebounds, 7 assists. We had a huge prop on Giannis to hit two threes in the game at plus 285. He hit one. Drag. Middleton had 20. Holiday had 12, but he hurt himself in the game, like a heel contusion. And then Grayson Allen had 10. Nwora had 15. Connaughton had 20. Connaughton hit four threes. He hit 8 of 13 from the floor. Connaughton had a sick dunk in that game, too. I couldn't believe they shot 45%. From the floor, 37% from downtown. I guess the only thing good the Nets did was shoot 17 to 32 from three, 53%. Patty Mills was the difference there, but I mean, I'm not going to complain that Durant had 32, but he missed a lot of shots. So did Harden. Harden missed 10 shots. Durant missed 12 shots. They were just chucking from everywhere and missing. I mean, if you shoot that many shots, eventually you're going to score points, right? But, I mean, they're favored to win the championship, and they look like crap, if you ask me. And Claxton had 12. God only knows how many turnovers he had. I mean, they got him down for none. Every time I saw him, the guy had stone hands in the game. They kept throwing him the ball, and he'd lose it, and the Bucks would be going the other way. They got down so many times in that game, I had to turn it off. I couldn't even take it. I couldn't watch them. They were down so many times in the game. At one point, they were down 15, 16 points. I couldn't even take it. The Warriors are up early on the Lakers, 9-6 at Staples out of the gates. LeBron gets fouled under the basket. He'll go to the line. But here's this veteran-laden old man Laker team with all these old guys on it. Literally everyone on the team has like been in the league forever. That was a nice pass by Westbrook to LeBron. As usual, Brody doing his thing, dishing. We'll see what happens in this one tonight. The opener at Staples in L.A., LeBron misses the first free throw. They got everybody on this team. They really do. Davis, James, Bazemore, Jordan, Westbrook on the floor now. Melo has not entered. Dwight Howard, Rondo, Avery Bradley, Monk is also on this team. So, and then as far as the Warriors are concerned, look at Wiggins hitting a three. Green, Wiggins, Looney, Curry, Poole. Iggy's on this team again. He's back with the Warriors. Porter's on there. Toscano Anderson is on this team still. And 12-9 Warriors out of the gates. So, Carver, you're big on the Warriors hitting the over. What was it, over 47.5 for you?
Yeah, 47.5. I just feel... feel a little bounce back. I just feel like what you saw at the end of the year with Steph, I think that Wiseman will be a little better. I think they're going to get Klay back. Look, is Klay going to be as good as he was a couple of years ago? I mean, it's hard to expect that. But I think that they're a 50-win team.
So they got to wait till like late December, early January for Klay to get back. That seems like forever to me. I mean, it's not even for Halloween yet, and that's like, you know, I know Thanksgiving, Christmas, right around the corner doing push-ups. That's about when they're going to see him again, right? I mean, he's not coming back anytime before that. They keep saying late winter, so I don't know. That's not even late winter to me. December, late December, yeah. Is not late winter.
I mean, there's still a lot of season left at that point, but... I mean, it's not ideal. You don't know what to expect. It's been so long since he's played.
2 years. That guy could shoot in his sleep. And, I mean, automatic, Curry and Thompson will be 1-2 in shooting on that team no matter what. I mean, he could shoot. This isn't a question of shooting. It's a question of his wheels, right? Blown out Achilles, blown out knee. So he's had horrible injuries to his wheels, but nothing's wrong with his shot. I've seen him shooting in the gym. You know, he's been at it a million times shooting. That's not his issue. So I think they'll get the shooting back, no problem. But will he be able to run and play at a high level with, you know, used tires? That's the bottom line. The guy had major work done on his wheels, and that's just it. It is what it is. So it's great to see it back. I mean, at the very least, that the NBA is back. Tomorrow night, there's tons of games. Tonight, there was just the two games. So we can settle into this Laker-Warrior game as we watch the tail end of this good game between the Red Sox and Astros at Fenway. It's been 2-1 forever. And, you know, the weather's been good. They've been getting these games in lucky so far with the, you know, weather up in New England. Here in New York, they're in the sixth, 2-1, Astros up, one out, nobody on. It's strange to see a tight game. I guess you thought it was going to be a tight game tonight, Carver High, because you were on the Astros and Greinke, but he's long since gone. But it is a low-scoring game.
It has been so far. You thought that you would once again get some fireworks up here at Fenway, but there's still time for that. Once we get a little deeper into these bullpens, anything can happen here at this point. I still think the Astros got a shot to pull this out tonight.
They better.
Yes, they better, because I don't like their chances 3-1. And another Islander goal here is it's now 3-0 in Chicago. Look out.
That was my top play in hockey, thank God. My Penguins lost tonight in a shootout. Dallas looked really good. I think Radulov had the winner in the shootout, the last goal, against Tristan Give-It-Away Jari. All right, it's Pharrell on the Bench. Don't go anywhere. Just came in the game. He wasn't even in the game 5 seconds. He got called for a legal pick. And here he is with the pill. I got to see what he does with the Lakers. It'll be interesting. He was, you know, in my view, he's 15 a night in Portland. No problem. If they give him that kind of burn in L.A., he'll help them immensely. All right. Rick Carl's our sports business and legal insider on the Bench and on Coast to Coast on Sports Grid. You see him all over the place. All right, Rick, let's start with the inevitable. We were talking today about the Canes problems and the Dolphins problems. And I want to start with the Miami Canes. As you know, I love them. And I've had it. I'm done with all this nonsense. They're going to get beat again this week. NC State will go down there and beat them at Hard Rock. They're a loser now, flat out. And what are they going to do about it when it comes to Manny Diaz? He's got to go. I mean, it's 2 years now running of just failure, just one loss after the next. They look anemic for a team with alleged talent and speed. They show none of that capability in football games.
Well, first of all, remember, you and I had this, it seems, weekly. So, and you promised, because you said you had it last week, not to watch the North Carolina game. Did you watch it?
I did not watch the North Carolina game because I knew they were going to lose.
All right. Well, that's 3 hours of my life that I'll never get back. So, excuse me, 4 hours of torture. And the other thing about Manny Diaz is that I'm watching his press conferences and usually can't learn a lot because I think coaches can only lose in their press conferences and not win. Having said that, there's no urgency. He admits that they've got to do something, but I guess the point is that it's a hard situation anyway when you're the captain of the Titanic that's sinking. But do you make it sound like all hell is breaking loose and you create panic, or do you say, I'm in charge, I've got this, and he chose that. But when you say that, nobody really kind of believes it. And so he's in a difficult position, and I it doesn't get any easier because, you know, Pitt is in the top 25, as you know, because we talked about it today for the first time in a while. They play them later this season. Florida State's resilient. North Carolina State is a loss. They may beat Duke, but, you know, that's not guaranteed. It is interesting if the only wins this season are Coastal Carolina and Appalachian State and Central Connecticut State. Those are the two wins, not Coastal Carolina. They would lose to Coastal Carolina. Sorry.
They would. Now, is Donna Shalala still running that school?
No. A new president has come in, and he's not a football guy. But, you know, when Manny Diaz was hired, the whole tradition was here's a savior because he knows the program, and his father was the mayor of Miami, and this is a big deal. Because he's going to Temple, and we don't have a coach, and Mark Richt wasn't the right answer because he just wasn't into this. And in order to keep the continuity of the recruits and to save the image of the U, we got to have a U guy. Manny Diaz, I guess, was the closest they could find to a U guy. You know, Ed Reed is hanging around. I'm not sure he's an X's and O's guy. But, you know, he is the director of football operations. I guess that's not the title. I don't know what his title is as a college administrative guy. But I wouldn't be surprised if he finishes out the season as head coach.
Do you think they'll keep him as head coach, Ed Reed?
You know, if they keep him, when they take him, there was kind of an obligation then not to only have him as an interim because – he's, you know, a tradition guy, and I don't know if you hire somebody like that with no head coaching experience and making a commitment that says it's going to be hard to undo it after six more games. So it's tough, man. I'm telling you, I've been to a game. You know me, and we're the same on this one. I haven't been to a game this year.
Well, I don't think Manny Diaz had head coaching experience. He had assistant coaching experience, and his head coaching experience has been a lobotomy.
Well, and his offensive coordinator, which is probably a good hire, this Brett Lashley, they talked about him being the interim. They're already starting to talk about interim and who's going to finish the season, which is never any good. And at least on the other side of town, on the professional side, nobody's talking about Flores that way, although maybe a couple more losses, like to Atlanta, and they'll start talking about him that way, too.
You know, I actually think Flores has some level of skill as a coach, but I don't think this football team has any hope. I think their season's over, and I got to tell you, I think Tua Tagovailoa's career is taking a nosedive in Miami. I think his days are numbered as the quarterback of the Dolphins. I think they'll eventually get rid of him.
Well, they're talking about that already. It's amazing. When you say they, the media is, and I'm kind of tired of hearing some of these stories because you see the inevitable Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson stories already. I mean, you know, give me a break. And obviously the Deshaun Watson stories. And so at the end of the day, his receivers are the problem. Not because they're not any good, but Devontae Parker's always hurt, and Preston Williams was hurt, and Will Fuller suspended and then hurt. So is it the lack of receivers, or can the guy not throw deep to guys that can't get any separation? He was actually pretty good over the middle to his tight ends, but they took it away in the second half. And I liked his mobility, but again, you got to give the guy a chance, I guess, because he has no line and he had no receivers. But if you give him a chance and he hasn't succeeded so far, and everybody realizes that, what, Justin Herbert was two picks below him,
right.
And it hurts. It hurts as a Dolphin fan.
Well, he's had his chance, and now he's back again from injury and had his chance again, and he wasn't that bad, but he lost to the Jaguars. I mean, what more do you need to know? And then, you know, we've already seen this guy have all these tests and these games and these chances, and it's just not good enough. And that's all there is to it. I think the reality is they want Deshaun Watson, and if he could ever get out of his legal mess, that's the guy that could save the Dolphins if he plays football again. I don't believe for 1 minute Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson are going to the Dolphins.
But there's a lot of fodder about that. So let me ask you this question, as a Dolphin fan. If the legal problems are behind him, and that's a big if. You can't just wipe that away, but let's assume it for this conversation. Is he worth 3 first-round picks?
I think he, you know, if he gets out of his legal mess, I would say yes. I would say he is. He's a great quarterback. That's all there is to it. He's a great quarterback. Now, look, Trevor Bauer, I think, believe it or not, is going to get out of his mess. I do believe he's going to win legally in this case. And he's already won the, you know, restraining order lawsuit. And the judge basically made the girl out to be a hooker. I mean, let's face facts. She's like, all the text messages, all the sex, all the talk, all the going back for more. It's all, you know, you're busted. She said, you asked for it. I mean, that's what she said. And so he won that case. Now he's trying to get her to pay his legal bills. And the bottom line is, I think at the end of the day, he's going to get off because of all of that and then some. And so if that guy can get off as a predator, I have a feeling, I almost believe Deshaun Watson will get off. And the reason I believe that is because I think he's got a better lawyer.
Yeah, well, a couple of different circumstances, a lot of different facts, many more plaintiffs. You know, you got a number of people, and I've talked to a lot of people in the criminal justice system that say, you know, it's kind of strange that you have all of these plaintiffs coming out of the woodwork. It's either because there's one lawyer that's pretty good on that side, or Deshaun Watson's the predator. You know, either one. But they are different situations. And obviously the Dolphins or anybody would take Deshaun Watson with significant risk. And then would you take a rusty quarterback that hasn't played for a year? Damn straight you would. That's not the issue. I'd love to see the guy, frankly, quarterback the Dolphins. 3 first-round draft picks? Well, let's put it this way. Dolphins had 4 first-round draft picks in the last 2 drafts. And none of them has, you know, well, Waddle's the real deal at receiver, but there one maybe one for 4. So it's not automatically right that just because you have a first round draft pick, you're going to score.
Yeah, and look, when you're whatever they are, 1 and 5, I don't really care anymore about 3 draft picks. I need someone that can get some wins and throw some touchdowns. And I think fans down there are about done with this guy. And I cannot believe how his stock has tumbled in Miami from where he was in Tuscaloosa. We'll come back. We got the tech and sports top fives with Ricardo on a bench. All right, so we're talking to Rick Haro. I was looking at the, you know, the Bucks tonight getting their rings and their banner and everything in Milwaukee. It's interesting how they basically have 4 guys that own the team together, right? Like, are most of these teams now built that way with multiple owners?
Not most, but a lot of the hedge fund guys know each other in the business. So Wes Edens and Mark Lazary have been friends and business associates for a long time, and they're the ones that put the bid together. Then they added a couple of guys, and it's it's the same as it used to be, except we have a lot more wealth, and therefore a lot, you know, gone are the days of Jerry Reinsdorf and Eddie Einhorn, remember, putting together like a 23-member group to buy the White Sox. It's more like the Steve Ballmers, who can spend $2 billion for a team and do it, That's the model. Because when you have a big ego guy like a Mark Cuban or a Steve Ballmer, the last thing he wants is to share the spotlight with other people.
So when you look at the problems that Joe Tsai has with Kyrie Irving not getting a vaccine, or you see the problems that Ben Simmons is creating for the 76ers, I've had people tell me today it's the Sixers' fault. I've had people believe that it's Simmons' behavior that's appalling. Which situation do you find in terms of, you know, business-wise for these teams is worse?
Well, they're both bad. But I think in many ways the Simmons deal is worse because you tank for so long, you put this perfect team together. It includes a guy who can't shoot and is a knucklehead. And the other situation is pretty bad, too, because if I'm a fan and I realize how important Kyrie Irving is to the opportunity for the Nets to challenge this year, and then he decides to challenge authority, you know, you can feel how you want to feel about the vaccine, but it's pretty settled that if your employer tells you you got to do something like this and you don't, then you're not going to play. And so you got to be tough for a Net fan to sit there and watch him trying to challenge something where you know he's not going to win. I don't like either. Frankly, if it's A or B, I would choose C.
Well, if you were Washington State and they fired their football coach and all of his assistants because they didn't get the vaccine, what did you think of that situation with Rolovich and his staff?
Well, the same thing, except for one more piece of it, which is really important, which is, you know, if you're a coach, I don't know if you really are a teacher, but you're supposed to be a teacher and a leader of young men and setting an example. And if you set an example by saying if a rule is created, you don't have to follow it, that's not the example you want to set. You can set an example about speaking your own mind and believing your own thing, like taking a vaccine or not. But if it's mandated as a condition of employment and you don't get it and you're fired as well as your staff and you leave all the kids in a lurch, what does that teach you?
Yeah, that's a mess for sure. Let's look at the top five tech stories for the week. My favorite ones. Sports technology is a global market that's growing at an absurd rate and could triple in value by 2026. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, there's a stat company that does all of this stuff. So currency, technology, all the new companies that are created for, you know, heart rate monitoring and other kinds of medical devices as well. You add all of that up together, and you see a value about $13.7 billion in 2021, but even more important, it's about $32 billion by 2026 internationally, and it's growing by leaps and bounds. It's as big a segment of the sports business as gambling is. Gambling's going to overtake it just because of the sheer volume, as we know, but it's a big deal.
How about the NHL loving their new data revolution as they embrace the technology for the integration of sports betting on the season? It's crazy how this is blowing up.
Yeah, well, listen, Gary Bettman, as we know, he doesn't do anything half-ass, and the Canadian Parliament decriminalized single-event sports betting in June, which in that country was almost as important as the Supreme Court decision we had 2 May ago. And as a result, Turner and the NHL hopped on all of the, you know, seven Canadian teams, as well as the teams down here. And the activity, not only with the app, but it now gives you the prop bets that are available in the season. The sportsbook operators can do it with the NHL. You've got, for example, the Leonsises with the Washington Capitals, where you can actually bet inside the building at Capital One Arena. So NHL is moving in the right direction and trying to catch up as quickly as they can with other sports.
What about Sacramento, the Kings, and blockchain company Anchor, multi-year partnership? Isn't that about cryptocurrency?
Yeah, it's about cryptocurrency, and I'm still not sure if I would get in and get out. The only difference is now every week we have four or five new partnerships to announce. Vivek Ranadive, who, you know, owns the Kings, talks about how the blockchain and the crypto world can actually enhance innovation by educating people about the crypto economy and by talking about valuable historical lessons. I'm sure people don't buy cryptocurrency because they want to learn history lessons. They buy it because they think it's going to go up in value, and of course it will go down in value. They've got a deal called Mining for Good, where they're training people how to be crypto miners in the blockchain industry, and I don't get it, but listen, everybody's doing it, so it becomes a big deal.
It really is, and I'm involved in it a little bit, and I want to see how it turns for the better or for the worse. It's interesting to watch. Of late, it's kind of been actually growing and becoming fascinating to watch because it's increasing in value, and God only knows where it's going to go. The Winnipeg Jets become the fourth NHL franchise to install ProWire. What's that about, streaming play-by-play?
The cool thing about this is one of the NHL pushes that the league has tried to do in an arena. So the Jets, Winnipeg Jets, have joined the Florida Panthers, the Lightning, and the Leafs as the four teams that have partnered with ProWire. What they do is you're in your seat, you stream the games, you stream every other game you want to listen to at the same time. I'm not sure if I'm excited about going to a game and then constantly streaming another game while I'm listening. Hey, but it's your choice. You get to do what you want to do. And if you're an avid hockey fan, there are a lot of people that may do that. The bottom line is four teams today means probably 20 teams tomorrow and maybe the entire league by January.
So I was watching baseball, basketball tonight, and I had the Penguins and Stars game going on my ESPN Plus on my phone. So I know it's possible. I had three things going at once, and frankly, I thought it was fantastic. I loved it. The Good Sports 5, my pal, Earl the Pearl Monroe, who's been a great friend of the show over the years, a New York City legend, of course, has started a school to prepare kids for sports business careers in basketball, basically. And it's in, I think, the Bronx, right?
And it's a big deal because the charter school offers basketball as an activity, but it'll take a backseat to ensure attendees prepared for the wide world of everything in sports, marketing, PR, ticket sales, and beyond. So it's actually a school that teaches you about the sports business, but then it also does the same things that you normally do if you have to be a student, math, language, history, etc. And over the next 3 years, 110 more ninth graders will be added annually, capping enrollment at about 440 students, and Earl Monroe has put it together, so good for the Pearl.
How about Paris Saint-Germain? They got a bunch of money from some Qatar investors.
Yeah, 171 million euros, like they need more money, but now they're investing capital for marketing, for other things, and the La Liga president is saying, yeah, that's not fair because you're spending a lot more money than other teams. Well, unless you have the rules in place, you're going to have, just like the Premier League and Newcastle with their new investment, you have five or six teams that dominate the league, and then the other bottom group worry about relegation, and everybody in the middle stays in the middle. And that's what we try to avoid over here with the drafts and with the salary caps. And some of us avoid it, and some of us don't. Dolphins are in their 90th straight year of mediocrity. How does that sound?
Tell me about DeChambeau's new training business he's gotten involved in.
$3 million, seed round for Proteus Motion. It is a device as well as some opportunities to monitor a player health. And David Stern's estate is involved. Dave Winfield involved. Hospital for Special Surgery. And it is it's one of those medical situations that'll improve your training, revolutionizes strength training, and the idea of how long it takes to come back after a vigorous workout and after injury. And if DeChambeau looks at it and does it, It might not be the right thing, but he certainly studies it because, you know, say what you will about him, but he's certainly a geek when it comes to physical exercise.
Saturday night, Nemkov, this guy, Vadim Nemkov, who's the top-ranked light heavyweight in Bellator, he made it to the final of their light heavyweight tournament. So did fifth-ranked Corey Anderson. They'll fight for $1 million. That's a pretty good tournament that Bellator has put on.
Yeah, Bellator has become, you know, the biggest of all of the deals. I think the return of a major event on October 23, live from Moscow. They've got UFC stars showing their support at the arena in Phoenix. So, you know, Bellator has been consistent over time, and when you look at their numbers, they're probably the best, if not one of the best, the best boxing business out there.
Well, they got Showtime behind them, and they're showing all their fights, so I think that certainly helps. And Ed Orgeron, is that a good deal for him to get fired that way and get $18 million to go eat hamburgers?
Yeah, it's a great thing. I'm not sure. You know, he had to do all over again. He's a football coach. I know the $18 million, 17, 18, whatever the final number is. Everybody makes fun of the fact that who wouldn't want $18 million, $17 million. But the guy has been so committed to LSU. Did he make some wrong decisions after the national championship? Probably so. His fall from grace, pretty significant. But you got to say one thing about the guy. He's committed and has been committed to LSU basically from day one, even when he was at USC.
Well, that's a dangerous job to have down in Baton Rouge. They give you a deal, and you just know your odds of finishing the deal are slim to none because they fire everyone.
To get the buyout like this one at $17
million. Yeah, I guess. All right, Rick, great stuff this week. I don't know if I'm going to make it to Baltimore. I tried to get this guy interested in going, and he's committed to something else, so that might not be a go, but it was a hell of a thought when you think about it. Thanks for coming on the bench. I'll be in touch.
All right, man. Later.
There he is, Rick Haro, our sports business and legal insider from Harvard, also our hot dog insider on a bench. All right, so there you have it. Rick Haro was on the show. I just wanted to get an update, at the very least, Carver High. From the ALCS, still 2-1. And bottom of the seventh, nobody on, nobody out. Astros still down a run. Boston at the plate. Kike Hernandez leads it off. And still holding on to a one-run lead. We already know the Dodgers were winners 6-5 in an unbelievable comeback win over the Braves, down 5-2 in the eighth. Bellinger, a three-run shot. And then Betts, the gap shot to right center to drive in the winning run. Bellinger's home run tied it. Betts double won it. Betts had a big game. He's been their best player in the series, despite the Braves basically dominating the series until Bellinger's hit. That was really the first time that, I mean, I guess you're up 2-0 in game two, 4-2 in game two, and you still lose 5-4. They've never had any kind of control other than a two-run lead twice. Other than that, they've been losing. And then today, a miracle with Bellinger's big home run to right center. So that's all positive. Tomorrow night, again, game four at Chavez Ravine under the lights in Los Angeles. They played in the daylight hours today under the lights tomorrow night. Also, the Bucks opened up the NBA regular season tonight. They got their rings, their banner, and then they beat the Nets' ass, 127-104. Right now, the Lakers are leading the Warriors, who seldom come out to play, by only a bucket. It's 43-41, but after a Rondo triple, it's 46-41.